Hey, this is Warren Haynes of Government Mule, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hey, this is Paul Jackson from Blackberry Smoke, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hey, this is Charlie Starr from Blackberry Smoke, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hello and welcome to episode 528 of the Iron City Rocks podcast. I'm your host John, coming to you from the Iron City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, bringing you the best rock, hard rock, heavy metal, and blues talk on the net. Episode 528, very pleased to welcome back to the show Mr. Charlie Starr, Blackberry Smoke. Blackberry Smoke, if you follow the band, released an album in February called Be Right Here. Fantastic record. It's had a couple singles off of it already, Hammer and the Nail, A Little Bit Crazy, Dig a Hole, and the newest song, Azalea. Out on video, the album was produced by Dave Cobb, who's worked with Chris Stapleton, Jason Isbell, among others. So really, the great mix of stuff that you kind of come to expect from Blackberry Smoke, of the rock, Rolling Stone sort of stuff mixed with the country. And you know, as Charlie pointed out in a previous interview we did with him, the Rolling Stones were no strangers to having some country on their albums as well. So fantastic to have him back on the show. They are doing a show at the Roxian on Tuesday night. That's the 18th of March. So by the time you're listening to this, that may be later today. It might be tomorrow. So wanted to squeeze this in. Obviously, things with the passing of Britt Turner just a few weeks ago kind of postponed a lot of things. But the boys wanted to get back on the road, keep Britt's legacy alive, and they know Britt would have wanted them to do that. So great to have them in town with Dwayne Betts, obviously another person who we've talked to in the past. Dickie Betts' son will be opening that show. So a great night of, you know, call it Southern rock music, for lack of a better term, but I think that term is almost too limiting for what this is going to be. So we're going to play you a little bit off of the album Be Right Here, and we'll get into the interview with Mr. Charlie Starr.
Sometimes you're the hammer, sometimes you're the nail, like my daddy before.
gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome to Iron City Rocks. We have on the line Mr. Charlie Starr of Blackberry Smoke. How are you doing today, Charlie?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Doing fantastic. First, from behalf of all of us, our condolences on the loss of your brother, Britt Turner. Obviously, he passed away for those who might be living under a rock. Obviously, a tough thing, but I hope everyone's kind of pulling through and getting back to work, kind of gets everybody's head back in the right direction.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, it's a tough thing. Of course, it was I would say an inevitability.
Yeah.
He was fighting a really hard fight with a really, really aggressive brain cancer, and I think everybody now is just sort of feeling relief that he's not suffering anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I think unfortunately that was one of the types of cancer that those familiar when you see the glioblastoma, it's there's not normally a happy outcome, unfortunately, but
that's right. Yeah, tough one.
In happier news, you guys are back on the road. You're going to be coming in to do a show at the Roxy in McKee's Rocks here tomorrow night. The album itself has been out now for, it seems like kind of like a minute because of all the things that have gone on, but Right Here, you know, I'm kind of old school, so I waited till the album was actually released so I could listen to the whole thing before making a judgment or, you know, kind of enjoying it that way as opposed to the singles that you guys released. But can you talk a little bit about these particular songs? Now, obviously, this is at least your second album that I can recall after COVID, so you guys are kind of past that, you know, lockdown written songs. But how did this collection come together?
Well, it just the norm for us. I'll start to, when it feels like it's time for an album, if I don't have enough songs written, I will really buckle down and finish. And there wasn't, this album, it seems like there's sort of inadvertently a theme. And it definitely was not on my mind, you know, when writing these lyrics, whether I wrote them by myself or with friends of mine, you know, and some other writers. And it had nothing to do with Britt's health, you know. When the time the songs were written, he was not sick, so that kind of, it's an odd thing to look at it now and think like, wow, it really applies now, and it really was not intended.
Right.
But just like normally, it's just like, hey, it's time to make a record, and just write some songs, and we'll get together and play them and see if they feel good, and then if they do, we hit record.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. When you put an album together, one of the things I've always loved about your records is kind of the diversity of songs. You know, you listen to a song like Dig a Hole. You know, I remember talking to you a number of years ago about this and how you have kind of the ebb and flow that the Rolling Stones really had with stuff. But is it something you're conscious of when you're going through and you think, okay, I've got, you know, Hammer in the Nail, which I think is a great kind of song for everybody who's, you know, got kind of a crap job. And, you know, you listen to those lyrics and like, yeah, I hear this. And then, you know, maybe a bluesier, even I would say somewhat Allman Brothers influence, kind of Azalea. Are you conscious of those variations in songs? Is any of it deliberate, or is it just give me the best 10 of everything I've scraped together?
Well, it's it definitely is something I think about all the time when putting together a list of songs for a record. I'll definitely, or even writing them, like. Mm-hmm. I've already got something like that, and don't need more of that right now. You know what I mean? And it's something that we've always aspired to have a lot of variety. Even going back to our first record, there was a lot of bombast and, you know, big rock and roll, big riffs and big songs, and then some laid back acoustic kind of thing. So it really comes from the Stones and Zeppelin and even Skinnerd.
Yeah.
You know, they would have, seems like there would always be at least one song on their records that was like the Made in the Shade or Ballad of Curtis Lowe or a Mississippi Kid, something that was sort of back porch, you know. And nobody was better at that than the Stones. I just think that they just really got it right when they were, you know, whoever was, I guess it would be Mick and Keith that was
primarily
in charge of the running order of those records, but they timed it perfectly. It'd be like coming out of I guess XL Main Street, there's different sides to that record. There'd be big fast loud sides, and then the backwoods sides, the countryside. Anyway, I just gave you a very long-winded answer.
No, but it's fascinating because you touch on the running order, which is also something like, because you write these, and I have to assume you're not putting them on the album in the chronological order. So there's something in the songs that says, you know, Be So Lucky feels right between Like It Was Yesterday and Azalea.
Yeah.
Is that something that is that a band decision, or is that a Charlie decision, or do you let the producer kind of weigh in?
Well, the last two records, it's a Charlie and Dave Cobb decision. And the band, if they didn't agree, they would definitely say so, you know. But in fact, this one, I wanted Hammer and the Nail to be first when I started listening to the mixes and like, okay, put, you know, running order. You have to have a running order in place before it's mastered.
Okay.
It's a very important aspect. So I had Hammer and the Nail first and Dig a Hole second, and Dave Cobb called me and said, are you insane? And I said, what? And he said, you got to put Dig a Hole first. And I was like, what? And I said, well, it's not. I said, Hammer and the Nail's faster, you know. And he said, no, man. No. Dig a Hole is going first. So I said, okay, all right. And I think he was right. When I listen to it now, it feels correct.
See, I'm going to have to go back and listen to it out of order to see how I feel about that. Because it does, you know, I don't think people really realize that until you've listened to an album enough where you kind of sense the next song. You know, we all have that way. You know, you listen to this record so much that you don't need to know what the next song is. You can feel the chords coming. You almost have the timing of the space in between the songs.
Totally. Totally.
But, yeah, the Hammer and the Nail first, that I think I might have been inclined to agree with you on that. It's interesting, but I don't want to mess with perfection.
Well, thank you.
And another thing I noticed, this record, you guys keep it, you know, I don't want to say short, but by, you know, with technology the way it is, an album can be almost any length. Was 10 kind of a sweet spot, do you think, for the number of songs?
Well, I think I think that's, We've made longer records, you know, 12 songs, 13 songs. Dave likes 10. I think he likes 10 or 11. He is of the mindset that like 14, that's too long. Yeah. We're not making a double album.
Yeah.
But I think it's a nice statement, you know, 10 or 11 songs is plenty. Unless you got more to say, and then you can put as many as you want, you know. But I think that's a nice. I've seen some records these days, and it has to do with streaming.
Yeah.
And I've seen them that have like 20 songs, you know, and I'm thinking, I don't have that much free time.
Yeah. My commute to wherever is not long enough.
That's right.
Does the length of vinyl play into this equation?
Sure does. It sure does.
Point?
Yeah. Cause we have a few records that had to be double. Well, actually they're, one had to be a triple, but, a couple have had to be doubles just because otherwise it would sound horrible with that many songs crammed onto sides, you know. The 10 is a nice... I think that's probably why the average album length is the length that it is, starting when vinyl was the only option, you know, back in the 60s and 70s where that running order really became important then too, because it's like, well, what's the beginning of side two going to be?
Yeah. When you were talking about the Stones with Exile, it's fun to kind of think of a sides. You know, we've been used to linear music, you know, for the longest time, and you've got a career that's you guys have been blessed to be doing this long enough that, you know, when you started, no one cared about vinyl. And now you're probably out. I'm going to guess vinyl outsells your CDs, but that's just a guess.
It does.
So, you know, it changes what you do, really.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember, I can remember in about 1987 or so, when Tom Petty released Full Moon Fever.
Yeah.
And I got it on CD. And I remember there was a track where Tom Petty says, "Attention CD listeners, this is the time where you would either flip over your cassette or your record to start side two." So here it goes. And more people should do that. That was pretty genius.
Yeah, I actually for some reason still buy cassettes more than I should, and I have to laugh when you pick those up and they'll say C label for sequence. They don't even tell you the running order on the damn things. Like, I don't know what song this is, but, you know, I enjoy that, you know, that rigor of not being able to skip tracks. It really has changed the way that, you know, but you're right about some bands. As soon as the CD hit, what was it, 74 minutes or whatever the cap was, some bands took that as a, you know, badge of honor to give you 73.59 seconds of, you know, there's bands that can do that. You know, it's great if you want, you know, the Allman Brothers second set and you want the whole second set. But, for a studio album. Speaking of the Allman Brothers, I'm noticing as I see some photos of your show, I think it was last night, you guys are creeping up there with a number of people. You've got Benji joining you guys out on the road. You've got a percussionist now. You're one full-time drummer away from having, you know, kind of the full Allman Brothers suite of people. Is this something that you've kind of, I know, remember seeing in one of the DVDs that you guys did talking about adding keyboards, you know, being able to afford having a full-time keyboard. Was this always kind of in your heart of heart, kind of your wish to be able to kind of grow and fill out the sound more?
No, not really. It started with Benji. He and I had been playing music on the side together for a lot of years, acoustic shows, and then he would come and sit in with Blackberry Smoke as well, and it was always great. And I remember I had good friends who were like, "Man, you guys should keep Benji up there all the time, because it turns into the three guitar, guitar setup, which is really cool, and he's really good at it." And I said, "Yeah," and so we kind of did that, kind of, you know, invited Benji on in to the touring party. And then at that same time, Britt said, "Hey, man, you know, we always put percussion on records too."
Yeah.
You know, tambourine and maracas and congas. And he said, and we've known Preston for years and years, but Britt went to high school with him. And he was in this great Atlanta band called The Grapes. And so at one point, Britt said, "Let's have Preston come play this show with us." And he did. And we all were just like, "Oh, man, that adds so much, you know, so much movement with it." And so we just kind of kept him there too. So it just kind of evolved slowly.
Well, that's cool. Do you find yourself doing anything different as far as the live arrangements so that it doesn't sound cluttered, for lack of a better term? I mean, do you have to kind of...
No, just kind of let people be who they're going to be on their instrument. And luckily, those two guys are both very tasteful players, and they just kind of do the right thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember... I think a lot of people thought when Iron Maiden, you know, that third guitar, it's like, how is this going to work? This is a band that's a legend for two guitars, and you throw a third in, and after a while, you're like, this really does work, and it works really nice. And that's, I think, a band that probably risked sounding cluttered more so than even the style of music you guys are doing. So it's cool to see. As far as the set, I know you have been a long kind of agonize the set list and kind of keep it a living thing. Is this set list, are you able to kind of get the new material in there pretty well represented?
Yeah, we've been playing at least three songs a night, sometimes four or five. I love that. It's always a challenge, you know, people, like with every record, it's like, okay, now there's eight studio albums. How do you write the set list? And we're obviously, we don't play 3 hour shows. So I just always look at what we played in the, you know, the last time we play a certain city. Mm-hmm. And I'll think, well, there's a little bit of brain power that goes into it, because it's like, well, they don't, I guess most people don't want to hear the entire new album. So they want to hear their favorites too. And I, you know, I want to, we want to play them. So
yeah,
it's a little bit of a shuffle each day to say, well, let's keep it interesting.
I think for you guys, that's got to be like, because you're going, and unless you've changed a lot in the last couple of years, in and out of a lot of different tunings. As a player,
yeah,
I mean, do you have to sometimes be like, what the hell am I even in as you start the song out, or are you just kind of down to muscle memory on some of those, you know, catalog tracks?
No, I know. It's not, I only use, well, it's probably about mainly four different tunings. Standard, open G, open E, and then there's a couple of songs that have gotten crazy tunings. Azalea, the new song, it's in it's in a crazy low open C tuning that is a little wacky. In fact, I don't think I can play not one other song in it.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, if you get that guitar, you know what you're getting.
You're getting now. Does the tuning help with the creative side of things? You know, I mean, I think we're all used to open or, you know, standard tuning. But, you know.
It does. I was taught that tuning by Levi Lowry. And he and I were playing an acoustic gig together back during COVID. And he picked up a guitar and strummed it and started to play. And I looked and said, it caught my ear instantly. I was like, what tuning is that in? And he said, it's in this crazy C thing. And he showed it to me, and I tuned my guitar to it. And pretty quickly, my fingers went to what became the music for Azalea.
Mm.
A little melody and a little lick, you know, and so that song kind of grew from that. And that's how tunings are so valuable to me as a guitar player, because it's like your hands are like, Tom Waits said, your hands are like dogs. They go to familiar places.
Yeah.
And when you change it up, when you use a different tuning or even a different instrument, your hands don't know where to go. So they have to find a new thing.
Yeah, you're absolutely. I mean, every guitar I think I've ever picked up, it's this instant D chord, and then you kind of work, you know, from there. And it's. But I know for me, you know, mentally, when I'm in an open tuning, and then okay, when it's the you know, chorus and verse, but it's when you go to solo, it's like, whoa, where am I at?
Yeah, where am I going?
Yeah, that's a challenge in itself. Well, Charlie, I don't want to take too much of your precious day off today, but I want to thank you so much. We will see you guys tomorrow night. It should be a fantastic show, and the new album is available now. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
All right, again, thank you to Charlie Starr for taking the time out of a very busy schedule. The band obviously rescheduling some dates they had to miss with the passing of Britt Turner. To get back on the road, obviously they had arrangements to deal with, etc. They were able to get back out on the road last week. We'll still be honoring the date on the 18th here at the Roxy Inn in McKees Rock. So if you're listening to this in Pittsburgh, your chance to get to see them is either today or tomorrow, depending on when you might be listening to this, or you may have just missed it, unfortunately, but hope to get you out to the show. It'll be an amazing event. People love the Roxy Inn Theater. I've not heard anything negative about the facility. And the new Blackberry Smoke material is fantastic. And you've got Dwayne Betts, Dickie's son, joining them. So an amazing, amazing night of music on tap for us here in Pittsburgh. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to the show. You can visit us at IronCityRocks.com. We're on all the social medias as Iron City Rocks. We'll be doing concert giveaways, concert announcements, and music news podcasts. If you're new to the show, if this is the first episode you've listened to and you're a Blackberry Smoke fan, go back in the archives. We've had Paul Jackson, we've had Charlie Starr on in the past. If you're a fan of this kind of music or blues, rock, metal, we invite you to check us out. We're on all the major podcast providers as Iron City Rocks. And just a real quick moment, a word of warning to people entering the contest. We've seen this, and I personally have fallen victim to clicking on one of these on another page that I follow, where people will set up fake profiles. And we've seen this with Iron City Rocks, unfortunately. Maybe it's bad to be popular, but someone has decided to spoof Iron City Rocks out there. And what they've been doing is telling people they've won tickets to shows that we're giving away with a link to click on that asks for a credit card. We want to say very clearly, Iron City Rocks will never ask you for credit card information. We have no need for it, nor want for it. If you're winning tickets through us, the most information we need from you is your name for your photo ID for will call, or your email address if it's an electronic ticket. There is no reason to ever provide payment information to Iron City Rock. So hopefully no one fell for a victim to that. I know it looks awfully tempting. We were giving away tickets to see KK's Priest at Stage AE. A lot of people were very interested in the show, but somebody went through with a Iron City Rocks look-alike profile. They stole our graphics. They had one follower. They were in the category of grocery store on Facebook, so an obvious fake. But when the graphic's the same, the name looks the same, people, were pretty upset. So our apologies go out to anybody who fell for any of that. Invite you to be very careful, had the same experience as I said. A local restaurant was giving away something, and somebody told me I won. Hey, click. And, one of my credit card, and luckily the red flags go off at that point. So just a word of caution to all of you out there. Again, drop us an email, ironcityrocks@gmail.com. Let us know what kind of music you're into, what kind of interviews you like, things you're tired of hearing about, things you want to hear about, bands maybe we don't know about or you haven't heard us cover yet. We'd be delighted for some suggestions for bands that you're into. So until next time, thank you for taking the time to listen.